Getting you ready for a giant weekend of college football. Pitt with one of its biggest games, really, of the 21st century. I was mapping those out this morning, Dr. Football, and then welcome to Adani Football Friday, and it's up there, man. You had, obviously, I mean, the Fiesta Bowl we don't talk about. That's a pretty big game to play Alex Smith and Utah in the Fiesta Bowl on national television.
Urban Meyer, too, right?
Yeah, I think.
Or did he leave?
I think he left and Kyle Whittingham may have coached that game. I think. Pitt Wake Forest for the ACC title. Pitt Miami in 2002. We forget about that one. I'm not talking about results of games. I'm talking about going into the game. Miami had like a 30-something game unbeaten streak. Pitt was unbeaten in the Big East, I believe, at the time. If they win that game with Larry Fitzgerald, they may go on to win the Big East and go to a major bowl. But Miami came in and won it. Pitt Cincy with the Big East and a BCS bowl at stake. Clemson coming here in Pickett's year. All of those. This one's in there. And Donnie, you could argue it's bigger. You could argue it's bigger because by the time I think all of those games happened, the big prize, the national championship, and I'm not saying Pitt's going to win it, please, but the big prize was off the table. It's not off the table yet. They win this. It's another step toward the playoff. This is as big a game as Pitt has played in a long, long time.
Yeah, as long as you stay undefeated, and like you mentioned, to that point in all of those games you referenced, they were not undefeated. So when it was the BCS era, it was already a lost cause.
Like, yeah.
Best case scenario, they would get a BCS bowl. They're still alive for this thing. As long as they win tomorrow.
And people, of course, will laugh and say, oh, he just mentioned Pitt in the national championship in the same sentence. Well, the whole point is you keep the dream alive if you stay unbeaten. To me, that's the whole point of that. And then all of a sudden you set up what will be a five steps bigger of a game against Clemson. And then what? You know, it's there right now. And then there's Penn State, Ohio State, which nationally, of course, is the bigger game. Played at noon, and that's where I want to start with our next guest, one Joe Smeltzer of Nittany Sports Now, a former student of mine. There he is. He's standing outside the stadium, Donnie. We have him on 93.7 The Fan
that?
Video.
There he is.
This is legendary. Joe, how are you?
I'm doing great, Joe. I've come a long way from Waynesburg, obviously, and this is my third full season on the Penn State beat, standing right here as those watching the video can see outside of Beaver Stadium. Got here a little early for some college game day availabilities. And, it doesn't get much bigger than this in college football. And I'm excited. 12 o'clock tomorrow can't come soon enough.
So. Clearly, Joe, taking my sports writing class at Waynesburg sparked your entire career, yes?
Yeah, I would say so. Definitely helped, so.
Donnie, I wanted to start you, Joe, with this. The noon start tomorrow. To me, and this might only be me, I think people are way overreacting to this. If I were still in college, I would probably start drinking right now for tomorrow's game. I love the noon start. You just wake up, you have your tailgate party at 8 in the morning, you're fired up for the game, and then you still have the night. If they win, here's the whole point. If they win, you still have an entire night of celebration ahead. I don't mind the noon start. How do people there feel about it?
Well, from a sports writer's perspective, and Joe, you probably agree with this too, I like the thought of everything wrapping up by 4 and wrapping up my stuff writing by 6 and then going home. So I like, from a work standpoint, I really like the noon kick. From a fan standpoint, to Penn State specifically, I think it definitely loses something not having that whiteout environment at 7:30 and having to really kind of torpedo the whiteout plans as we know them because of what Fox is doing with the noon kicks. But the TV stations make their money. Penn State fans still get to watch what should be a heck of a show tomorrow. So I think it is overblown to an extent. But I do see why people would be a little frustrated at this type of matchup, not kicking off under the lights at Beaver Stadium.
Joe, in the 3 years that you've been covering Penn State, you have covered some big ones. I mean, you've gotten to cover a Rose Bowl already under your belt. Where does this game rank for you, Penn State football-wise, in the 3 years?
As far as overall hype surrounding it, maybe number two behind Michigan last year. I just think going back with all the outside stuff that didn't have much to do with Penn State, everything surrounding Michigan, the drama surrounding, is Jim Harbaugh going to coach? You know, what's going to happen to Michigan? Is this season going to end up being null and void? Just all that outside hype, it's really hard to beat that. And then, of course, Penn State had to win that one, too, to stay alive in the Big Ten race and the college football playoff race. And this year, with the 14 playoff still in effect, I think this would have been number one. But because of the 12-team playoff, you know, Joe, you guys were talking about how the 12-team playoff really makes Pitt-SMU a much bigger deal than it would have been before this new format. I think it kind of has the opposite effect to this Penn State-Ohio State game. I think maybe it's a must-win for Ohio State. Having two losses would really put it on the playoff bubble and knock it out of the Big Ten title race. But it's weird saying this, but Penn State could lose tomorrow and really be just fine. You have four games after this. They're going to be favored to win all four, probably all four by double digits, at least three of them by double digits. And the 12-team playoff really kind of takes some of the luster out of this because, you know, one team, it might be a must-win for Ohio State. It's definitely not a must-win for Penn State. And that wouldn't have been the case last year. So, to answer your question, Donnie, I would put it at number two because of the hype surrounding Michigan coming into last year's game. And also, Penn State had to beat Michigan last year. And it, frankly, doesn't have to beat Ohio State tomorrow to win a national championship.
Joe Smeltzer of Nittany Sports Now. Wonder Twin, do you have a question for your old Waynesburg classmate?
I do. Joe, it comes down to Drew Aller in this game for me. Do you think that he's going to play? And what does Drew need to do to pull out a victory for Penn State in this game?
To answer the first part of your question, Austin, yeah, I think he's going to be good to go. I think, you know, you're not diving and doing ball security drills if your knee is not at least close to 100%, right? And that's what Drew was doing when we saw him at practice Wednesday, and I fully expect him to play Saturday because of that. To answer the second part, that's a good question. I just think that Drew needs to do what he's been doing all season long, and that's really playing quality football. I think it's easy to forget with what ended up happening against Wisconsin with Bo Pribula coming in and really – not only holding down the fort as the backup quarterback, really kind of playing lights out in that second half. It's easy to forget that in the first half before Drew went down, he was playing some of the best football he's played at Penn State. He went 14 of 18, should have been 15 of 18. Joey and Fleming dropped a gimme pass in the red zone that would have probably added a second touchdown for Penn State. But I feel like Drew is definitely going to be good to go, and I think that if he plays the way he's been playing all season, he's been one of the most efficient quarterbacks in college football. I think just continuing those efforts would go a long way to Penn State getting a win Saturday.
Joe, this might be a tough one for you because I don't know how much of an argument you can make, but we know the James Franklin coaching record against great teams is not good. He does have one Big Ten title under his belt. He's beaten Ohio State just one time in his career. What argument would you make for people to say, you know what, I do think a James Franklin coach team can get the job done tomorrow?
Yeah, I think the argument, Donnie, there would be to kind of forget about 2023, 22, 21, 20, etc., and focus, you know, on what advantages this Penn State team has in 2024 over the 2024 Ohio State Buckeyes. And Donnie, I know you like this. I think a big factor in this game is going to be the trenches. Ohio State's offensive line, frankly, might be a mess tomorrow. You know, you're down to your first-string left tackle, and when you have injuries on the offensive line, that really kind of creates a domino effect because, you know, tackles might have to move to guard. Guards might have to move to center. It really kind of messes up the whole ordeal when guys are hurt, and I think that you're going to see a lot of shuffling on the Ohio State offensive line tomorrow. Unfortunately for Penn State, everybody's talking about Drew Aller's injury, but denied Dennis Sutton, who is one of Penn State's best players on the other side. He suffered what looked like a groin injury in the second quarter against Wisconsin, and unlike Drew Aller, he was not seen in our practice viewing window. So, frankly, I would be surprised if Drew Aller can't go. I'd be equally surprised if Denai Dennis Sutton can go on Saturday. So, but even with him out, and that's going to hurt a lot because obviously he's a guy that could be a first-round draft pick, and also Abdul Carter, the other defensive end, is somebody that Penn State likes to move around and likes to play in other places besides the edge. If Denai can't go, do you kind of lock Abdul Carter into that edge spot, or do you really kind of use more of a rotation at defensive end and play Smith Filbert a lot more than you would otherwise? I think that the ends that Penn State has behind Abdul and Denai Dennis Sutton, Smith Filbert, who I just mentioned, he's a fifth-year guy. Amin Vanover is a fourth-year guy. He's a guy that's really made the most of his opportunities kind of coming in the reserve role this season. I still think that Penn State's depth at defensive line is strong enough to cause Ohio State's O-line a lot of problems, especially if it's down to its first-string left tackle.
Joe, we appreciate the time, man. I'll leave you 15 seconds here on a question we're going to deal with. If Penn State loses this week but gets in as an at-large and loses in the first round, is that a satisfactory season? 15 seconds.
No, it is not. Losing a first-round playoff game, James Franklin has already proven that he can make a 12-team playoff, right? They would have made the 12-team playoff in each, in I think, six of the past eight seasons. If they lose in the first round, I don't know how much progress people are going to see that as. So losing a first-round playoff game, which would likely be here at Beaver Stadium, no, that would leave a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths.
Thank you, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you, guys.
What a wonderful man he is, Donnie.
A wonderful young man.
He really is. I'm glad to see him having success in his career. I am. 50-minute mark on the Fan brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge, Route 19, Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. And I thought that he was really enthusiastic and completely backed my assertion that the sports, he took two sports writing classes from me at Waynesburg, really launched his career. Listen to his answer when I asked him that. Clearly, Joe, taking my sports writing class at Waynesburg sparked your entire career, yes?
Yeah, I would say so.
You got to keep that that little, yeah, I would say so, as a drop. That has now entered the pantheon.
I can do that.
Right up there, some would say, with our Dr. Dick interview.
Can I call you Ron, Dr. Yeah. Dick?
Some of the other ones, Donnie, we'll always remember that one, wouldn't we? Or won't we? George from Washington.
Pomp will always remember.
Yeah. There's no way Pomp knew that was Pony. Did he?
No, I am not convinced.
Yeah, there's zero chance. And then, of course, there's Todd, who called in your show with some advice to TJ Watt and Cam Hayward on what to do about Pickens.
Yes, and Todd was basically saying, hey, what you doing? You like my impression there, Joe?
We'll get that clip in a minute for you, Donnie. What do you guys think? For Penn State, what is a satisfactory season? Does one win do it then in the playoff or no?
I think they at least need to win one playoff game, yeah. It's kind of funny because it feels like we're saying the same thing about the pro team in town, but they've been on the precipice of it so many times when it was only four teams, and now it's easier to get in, especially for them, and they're basically in. Like Joe said, and like we feel, they can lose tomorrow's game and probably still get into the 12-team field.
Oh, yeah.
So you do that, I think you have to win one of those playoff games because then you get down to, you know, the nitty-gritty of, hey, we do belong with the Blue Bloods. Like, if you're just in that top 12 and you lose that first-round game, you still kind of feel second tier, which is where they've been for a while.
I think two playoff games for me with Penn State, given the talent on that roster. For me, two games equals satisfactory season. After that, fine.
They have to win at least one playoff game. It has to. And because if you get a first-round bye, you're going to be playing a significantly lower seed. If they're the five seed, they're going to play like BYU and then maybe Oregon again. That would be a complete and utter failure if they don't win a playoff game.
How about Pitt? What's the bar for them right now? What makes it a satisfactory or unsatisfactory season?
If you're just saying satisfactory, I think they're basically there. I mean, after what last season was.
Oh, my God. The bar is that low? Well, what if they lose three more games?
They were 3-9.
So what?
Last season was a disaster.
Yeah, every season's different because of the transfer portal. One season, to me, has nothing to do with judging the next. They brought in a new quarterback.
And a new coordinator.
Yeah. Well, a new quarterback, to me, more importantly, underscoring the point that last year has nothing to do with this year. I'm always surprised at how low the bar is sometimes for Pitt.
I feel like for the fan base, it was low. Like coming into this season, you probably thought, hopefully we get back to bowl eligibility. We go like 6-6
yeah,
or 7-5.
That's low. So but they've already exceeded it for you. How about you, Limits?
My expectations have completely changed. Now it's make the playoffs.
Or bust. For me, it's 10 wins or bust. And they could lose this. Shoot, they could even lose to Clemson and get to 10 wins. I almost feel like that's too low. But when you start 7-0 and you have an Alabama transfer at quarterback who was playing great, who people were talking about for the Heisman a couple weeks ago, and your schedule is what it is, which is right now there's no top 10 team on the whole thing, you got to get to 10 at this point. You're 7-0 with five games left. Anything less than that, for me, is not a satisfactory Pitt season because my expectations are no longer tethered to what I thought before the year or anything like that. You start 7-0, Donnie, for me at least, they go up. It should really be what he said. It should really be the playoff. I mean, you have a coach who walked in here a long time ago talking about competing with Penn State for state supremacy, talking about national championships, talking about all that. And sometimes I think it's remarkable how low the bar sometimes gets with Pitt. Why not raise it?
And there's also an opportunity, if they do keep on winning, that maybe they do have a battle for state supremacy, Joe, with a lot on the line.
Would that be great?